Is it something worth pushing back on? Or are our egos just bruised? It's hard to tell when so often we're tired and emotionally spent. The world of politics is similarly hazardous. Abraham Lincoln, the greatest leader I'm aware of in any modern context, had a very interesting coping mechanism for the onslaught of criticisms that came his way. Lincoln would write blunt, scathing letters to his opponents, and then not send them. In his classic book, Lincoln on Leadership, Donald T. Phillips describes Lincoln's distinctive practice. One of Lincoln's most effective methods of dealing with harsh criticism was to write extended letters of refutation. Often, in order to vent his anger and frustration, he would sit down at his desk, compose a letter of denial, and then walk away without sending it. He felt better for having stated his case, but did not want any of his angry or emotional remarks made public. After learning that Lincoln did this, I've gotten in the habit of rehearsing what I would say to someone who I feel has wronged me. It might seem strange, but it's been healthy and helpful for me. I find that one of two things usually happens. As I hear my thoughts become audible, I can hear how prideful or insecure they are in a way I couldn't when they were silent thoughts inside my mind. Usually this leads me to just drop it and move on. Or I feel that my anger or hurt feelings are legitimate, and I experience some level of relief at having said it aloud, if only to myself. It's cathartic, and it's usually enough to help me move on, even if I think I have been genuinely wronged. Sometimes there's a third outcome of these imagined dialogues. I realize that the matter needs to be addressed. A confrontation needs to happen. If this is the case, I've had at least one dry run of articulating how I'm feeling. That way, when the necessary conversation happens, I'm not clumsily improvising on the fly. I've rehearsed it at least once and have some sense of what to say and what not to say. No matter what sort of influence we have, we all need to understand what it looks like to choose our battles and handle criticism in a Christ-like manner. Parents need to learn this, as do employees and employers. Teachers, politicians, coaches, friends, siblings, sons, daughters, neighbors, we all need to learn which sorts of conflict are worth our time and emotional energy. Lincoln set an example for us, and now we will see how Paul and his team handled similar circumstances. Paul in conflict. What was Paul's view of conflict? How did he handle the struggle of personal criticism? And how did he advise his teammates on how to navigate the minefield of potential conflict? What was worth fighting over? As we'll see, Paul was sooner to avoid conflict than to engage in it. Avoiding conflict. The church in Corinth was riddled with conflict, and some of their angst was directed personally toward Paul. His response sets a great example for us. In 1 Corinthians, Paul is responding to divisions in the church regarding which leaders to follow. Paul had no time for this sort of meaningless division, writing these words on the subject. I appeal to you, brothers, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be united in the same mind and the same judgment. For it has been reported to me by Chloe's people that there is quarreling among you, my brothers. What I mean is, that each one of you says, I follow Paul, or I follow Apollos, or I follow Cephas, or I follow Christ. Is Christ